New Jersey's Clean Energy Program proudly supports WHYY. New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, incentivizing businesses, local governments, schools, and residents to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing in your home and business with support from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.
The Philadelphia School District comes up against a wall of resistance in Logan. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. At a fiery meeting last evening, parents of students at J. Cook Elementary staunchly criticized the district's plan to convert their school into a charter. As WHYY's Kevin McCory reports, parents were also upset about the way the district staged the meeting.
As Home and School Association president, Deborah Azur has worked for years to improve Cook Elementary for her two seventh-grade children. Last week, though, she felt betrayed.
We got this notice stating that they want to turn the school into a charter, and that was like a real kick in the face. And that kind of hurt.
Last Thursday, the district announced a set of sweeping proposals that would affect 15 schools and 5,000 students, moves that include new school openings, closings, and district-led and charter conversions. Cook is one of three district elementary schools that Superintendent William Height has tapped to become a neighborhood-based charter starting next year. Leaders cite declining test scores and poor school culture as key pieces of rationale. Similar reasons were given when leaders proposed closing the school in 2012. Assistant Superintendent Randy Davia led the district's presentation.
And now we sit here several years later with similar concerns and even more declining academic and safety issues.
Many parents argue that Cook could rebound under district control if given a strong leader and enough resources to support teachers. I talked about this with Denise Roby, who has a fifth grader at the school.
If the charter can do a better job for your kid, why does it matter?
How can you say that?
Which, I'm just saying hypothetically.
Well, hypothetically, no, because the same resources or the money they got, they can give it to the kids that's in public.
Parents complain that the school district had set them up for failure by installing what they perceive to be a weak school leader in recent years. This year's new principal has created a much better culture in the school, they say. Parent Renita Brown has a seventh grader.
What is there right now is good enough for my child. What was there previously is not good enough.
As the meeting grew more heated, Assistant Superintendent Davia hoped to steer parents towards common ground.
Everyone in this room wants the same thing, and that's what we have to remember, right? What do we want? We want a great
no charter.
Some parents voiced distrust of charters, fearing their children would be pushed out if they fell behind academically or committed disciplinary infractions. Davia promised that all current students would be accepted by the charter provider and pointed to the success that most of the 20 existing Renaissance charters have had improving academics and culture. Unlike the last time the district proposed charter conversions, this time parents will not be able to vote to accept or reject the charter, as two school communities did in spring 2014. A few parents will be chosen to sit on a committee that will choose which charter operator should take over, but not whether a charter should take control. This information, though, was not explicitly communicated to parents at Tuesday night's 90-minute meeting. Many left still thinking they would have a larger say in the matter. I informed Renita Brown of these details as parents filtered out.
No, it was not at all communicated that way. I'm very, very enraged, and I got a lot of praying to do.
Brown was also livid during the event about the way the district advertised the meeting, which only attracted about a dozen parents of the 400-some students who attend Cook. District leaders purposely omitted the meeting's address from the letter it mailed to parents that alerted them of Height's plan. To find out the details, parents were supposed to call a special hotline, leave a message, and then wait for a call back from a district staffer. Brown said many parents assumed the meeting would be held in the school's auditorium. Instead, it was held at a nearby church, and there were no signs or banners outside to help people find the location. Brown, a breast cancer survivor who suffers from a sometimes debilitating case of fibromyalgia, took it upon herself to alert the community of the details that the district withheld.
No address on there. So therefore, I, out of my own pocket money, got fluorescent color poster boards, taped it around poles and trees and posted it all around the gates of the school so the parents could know, you understand, to come to this location.
The district said it withheld the location information in hopes of attracting a small group of parents, not teachers upset about potentially losing their jobs, to have an intimate dialogue. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCrory.
A new program in Camden County aims to help overdose patients who come to area hospitals get treatment for their addiction. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, the idea was announced today during a lunch to honor police officers who've saved lives by using naloxone.
It's become commonplace to call opiate and heroin addiction in New Jersey an epidemic. But Freeholder Director Louis Capelli says it's time to change the status quo in Camden County.
Once folks are taken to the emergency room, they're given a card with some information, and that's it. We're training individuals in the emergency rooms to become familiar with the process and the treatment that is available through our program. So we're hoping that the folks in the emergency room will have some success in convincing some of these addicts that, you know, it's time to get some help.
Under the program, anyone in Camden County who is saved from an overdose by naloxone will be offered free outpatient detox followed by outpatient treatment in Pennsauken. The program is called Operation Sal, which stands for Save a Life. But it's also meant to memorialize Sal Marchese, who died of a heroin overdose 5 years ago. His mother, Patty Dorenzo, is a member of the Camden County Addiction Awareness Task Force. She helped develop Operation Sal and says it's a bittersweet way to remember her son.
If Sal wasn't the boy that he was, I probably couldn't do this. But he was a beautiful boy, and yes, I have to save lives for him and know that his life, he didn't die in vain.
The county is putting up $150,000 to kickstart the program, which it estimates will cover treatment for about 50 people. Four hospitals are participating: Kennedy, Virtua, Cooper, and Our Lady of Lourdes. Operation Sal should be up and running by next month. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
You've likely heard that there's a changing of the guard afoot at the U.S. Capitol. Speaker John Boehner's sudden resignation is revealing deep rifts within the Republican Party. As WHYY's Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo reports, more moderate GOP lawmakers from our region are not sure how much say they'll have in picking the next speaker.
Outgoing House Speaker John Boehner was once considered one of the most conservative lawmakers in Congress, but he angered the Tea Party wing of the GOP by working with Democrats to pass bills to, say, keep the government from shutting down. Central New Jersey Republican Leonard Lance is going to miss Boehner.
I think he did a fine job under extraordinary circumstances, and I'm sorry that he has chosen to resign.
Lance says the goals set by some members of his party, like immediately repealing Obamacare and defunding Planned Parenthood, are unrealistic.
It's clear to me that since Republicans have controlled the House beginning in January 2011, there has been significantly greater financial discipline than was formerly the case, so we need to continue to do that. I do not favor shutting down government.
Cutting spending is far from good enough for many House Republicans. Remember former House Majority Leader Eric Cantor? He was ousted in his Virginia primary by economics professor Dave Brat. Now as a congressman, Brat joined a Tea Party group called the House Freedom Caucus. With the GOP picking new leaders, Brad is among a group of conservatives demanding leadership candidates meet a purity test.
I'm going to support whoever puts their principles down on paper ahead of time, and those principles have to be the big deal. Balanced budget, no amnesty, get rid of Obamacare.
That purity test doesn't sit well with more moderate Republicans. Pennsylvania Congressman Pat Meehan from Delaware County says those pledges could box in GOP leaders.
Yeah, and I'm not quite so sure that you can predict all the dynamics of where we need to go in the future, either in events we know of or events we can't anticipate. So I'm always a little bit worried about litmus tests.
Meehan says some of his colleagues forget that the GOP only has a slim majority in the Senate, while a Democrat still sits in the White House with a veto pen at the ready.
Once again, it's coming to solutions, fighting for principles and sticking to principles, but appreciating that in the end we've got to govern and finding a way to get the best possible solutions we can, recognizing the mathematics that we face. And there's reality about counting votes.
Pennsylvania Congressman Tom Marino hails from rural Lycoming County and would not describe himself as a moderate. He says with Boehner on his way out, there's a chance for him and other rank-and-file Republicans to have a greater say in the party's direction.
It's time for us, as the Pennsylvania delegation has been doing, looking these guys in the eyes and say, okay, what are you going to do about this? And this is what we think should be done about conferences and we getting involved in matters.
Marino adds that it's good for the GOP that Speaker Boehner, who he calls John, is moving aside and allowing the next generation to lead.
You know, there's a transition here, and I don't mean this pejoratively to anybody. John is part of the old guard. And now, you know, part of the old guard that was cast with 88 of us in the 2010 election, who are the 21st century guys.
Tea Party conservatives had been mumbling about trying to push Boehner out this fall. His voluntary exit is saving the party some embarrassment, according to South Jersey Republican Tom MacArthur.
Speaker Boehner, I think, decided to leave now because he thought it might help to bring some healing, and I've seen some evidence of that.
Still, the Tea Party is not a group that will just go along with whatever direction the party moves. MacArthur is predicting a fresh set of headaches for the new slate of leaders.
I'm a realist. People's convictions aren't going to just go away, and tactics that have worked for different groups aren't going to just be forgotten. They're going to do the same things over, and we're going to have to deal with that.
Some more moderate Pennsylvania and New Jersey Republicans are trying to convince incoming party leaders that there's a critical mass of lawmakers who want them to govern in the middle. But they're facing off against the vocal and energetic Tea Party wing. Whoever wins could have implications for next year's presidential race. For WHYY News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Turning to this evening's headlines, police say they believe the murder of a transgender woman beaten and shot in North Philadelphia was a robbery rather than a hate crime. Keisha Jenkins was attacked early yesterday in the Logan section of the city and pronounced dead minutes later at a hospital. Pennsylvania's state budget impasse remains in place after Republicans easily defeated a proposal by Democratic Governor Tom Wolf to raise billions of dollars in new taxes in the coming years. The House today voted down a plan to increase state income taxes and create a new extraction tax on Marcellus Shale natural gas production. An art installation blessed by Pope Francis during his trip to Philadelphia is being disassembled, but it will be repurposed to help the needy. Officials said today that thousands of ribbons tied to a grotto will become insulation for a housing development for the homeless. More than 150,000 visitors wrote their struggles on ribbons and tied them to the hollow wooden grotto outside Cathedral Basilica of Saints Peter and Paul. 73 degrees, mostly clear skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:19. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Turning partly cloudy overnight, low 56 degrees. Sunny again tomorrow. Thursday's high in the low 70s. Still ahead, gay rights pioneer Mark Siegel recalls the early days of the struggle for equality.
And then all of a sudden, I think, women's rights are happening right now. People are fighting for black rights right now. What about me? What about my community? When do we get on the stage?
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Virtua proudly supports WHYY. This is the time of year to sign up for health insurance. When choosing a health insurance plan, it's important to know whether your doctor or hospital is included. If you want to use a Virtua physician, hospital, or outpatient service, you can find out if Virtua is in the plan you're considering by calling 888-VIRTUA-3. That's 888-VIRTUA-3. Virtua proudly supports WHYY.
The Pennsylvania Guild of Craftsmen supports WHYY and announces the Fall Fine Craft Fair at Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia, October 9th through the 11th. The weekend features 130 craftsmakers exhibiting American-made works, including handcrafted jewelry, contemporary furniture, designer clothing, and other functional works. The event is open to the public. Additional information online at pacrafts.org.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. A homegrown startup is on track to make the first gene therapy available in the United States. WHYY's Jessica McDonald reports on Spark Therapeutics' efforts to treat a rare form of inherited blindness with a single injection.
Patients born without a key gene in the eye eventually go blind as their rod photoreceptors wither and die. This week, Spark Therapeutics, a spin-off company of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, announced that its Phase 3 clinical trial using an injected virus to restore the gene was successful. The company's CEO is Jeffrey Marazzo, the son of WHYY's president. So far, details are few, and the findings have not yet been peer-reviewed. But Julia Howler, ophthalmologist-in-chief at the Wills Eye Hospital and an unpaid consultant on the project, says the results are a huge advance.
It was one thing to have one or two children who were able to see, you know, in the early days of the trial, showing that maybe it could work in a couple of cases. This is a Phase 3 trial.
It's the last testing step before FDA approval.
It was like hitting it out of the ballpark. The data was very, very impressive.
Jean Bennett is a professor of ophthalmology at Penn and one of the trial investigators. She says the main evaluation assessed how well patients who received the gene therapy moved through an obstacle course in dim light.
When I see one of these individuals able to navigate the course, it puts tears in my eyes to be able to actually witness this remarkable improvement in their vision.
Overall, the patient's visual acuity did not improve, although Bennett says this was not an expected outcome. The first scientific presentation of the results is set for this weekend in Paris at the Retina Society's annual meeting. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
Acclaimed activist, journalist, concert organizer, real estate developer, and now author, Philadelphian Mark Siegel's new memoir is entitled And Then I Danced, Traveling the Road to LGBT Equality. Mark, thanks for setting aside your dance shoes for a moment to take time on NewsWorks tonight.
It's great to be here. And guess what? I do have those dance shoes on right now.
Well, then let's pursue it. The title of the book refers to...
Well, I talk about how when I was young and how I started out as a gay activist at 18 years old, I had no money, I had no place to live, I had no job. I'm in New York, the Stonewall riots break out, I'm lucky enough to be there. I realize, you know what, I have no prospects for the rest of my life. What am I going to do with myself? I came here because I wanted to be gay, I'm proud of who I am. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of somewhere, I think, well, women's rights are happening right now. People are fighting for black rights right now. People are fighting for Latino rights right now. What about me? What about my community? When do we get on the stage? The words weren't there, but I became a gay activist and thinking I'll never have any money in my life. I'll never, you know, amount to very much, but at least I'll be fighting the good fight. Never did I expect that the President of the United States would invite me to be dancing at the White House with the man I love. Never.
Now, of course, prior to Stonewall in 1969, we can take it back to Philadelphia, the Dewey Restaurant sit-in back in April 1965.
LGBT rights in this country, in the United States, actually go back to 1925 to a man by the name of Henry Gerber, who chartered the first gay organization in Chicago. And from 1925 up until the Stonewall riots, there were never more than 100, count them, 100 openly gay people in the entire United States of America. After Stonewall riots, we built an organization called Gay Liberation Front. The first thing we wanted to do was to describe ourselves, find out who we were, rather than let society decide who we were. In 1969, if you thought about what gay people were like, we didn't appear on the media anywhere. And the only thing that people knew about gay people, or in those days, homosexuals and lesbians, was the stereotypes. The church thought that we were sinners. Police and law enforcement thought we were illegal. Psychiatrists thought that we were insane. Governments wouldn't hire us. We were the low of the low of society. And we had to come together and literally say to ourselves, hey, we're not sick. Hey, we're not illegal. Hey, we're not immoral. We are good, upstanding people. And aside from that, we wanted to do something that had never, ever been done before. We wanted to create an LGBT community. Up until the Stonewall riots, the only thing you had for gay people were gay bars, gay private parties, and places to meet, and a few, of course, gay organizations. So in that first year of Gay Liberation Front, we created the nation's first gay trans organization, the first gay youth organization, the first gay medical alerts, the first gay community center. And by the end of the first year, we created what today we call the Gay Pride Day. And in that first Gay Pride, we didn't have 100 out gay people marching. We had 15,000. In 1 year, we grew a movement from 100 people to 15,000.
To some of our listeners, that period, 1965 to 71, might seem like ancient history. Is this book intended in part as a sort of a retrospective of where the movement is now and where it came from?
When we were planning the book, there was only one contention with my publishers, and that was the cover of the book. They wanted to do a picture of me as I am today, successful, with a suit and tie on. Well, I wanted the front of the book to say to young LGBT people, we have a lot of equality today, we still have a lot further to go, but how did we get here? I wanted them to see in one graphic how we got there. So on the cover of this book, there's a picture of me being arrested.
Many years ago.
Yes, I have hair.
I presume that wasn't the only time you were arrested.
Oh, no. I have a long list of arrests, which I'm very proud of. Got arrested when I did the Today Show, Action News here in Philadelphia, trying to chain myself to the Liberty Bell. I got arrested.
Would you give Philadelphia a 100 score in terms of their efforts to ban discrimination against gays?
Oh, absolutely. Philadelphia, what most people don't know, has the strongest LGBT non-discrimination law in the nation. Better than New York, better than San Francisco, better than Washington, D.C. And I don't have to give the rating. Human Rights Council already has done that. Philadelphia is the most LGBT-friendly city in America. And that's something that I and the entire LGBT community in Philadelphia should be very proud of.
Mark Siegel, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Dave, it's been a pleasure being here.
Mark Siegel's new memoir is entitled, And Then I Danced, Traveling the Road to LGBT Equality. You can hear much, much more of our conversation, including Mark's story of crashing Walter Cronkite's CBS National News broadcast at newsworks.org. Finally this evening, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie may be tooling around in a black SUV these days, but back in high school, he had a slightly different four-wheel preference. Here he is talking about it for the new CNBC show, Jay Leno's Garage.
My first ride was a 1971 Chevy Camaro, burnt orange with a black vinyl roof, 110,000 miles on it when I bought it, three on the floor. It was a great ride to have as a high school senior.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back to the show at newsworks.org. With the general election just weeks away, Pennsylvania's Supreme Court judicial candidates are starting to roll out ads in what may be the most hotly contested race of the year. We'll check it out on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps private foundations by partnering on administration and grant making. Private foundations also can establish a donor-advised fund to save time and reduce costs. What's more, the Philadelphia Foundation also offers solutions when a private foundation has run its course. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philofound.org.
Annenberg Center Live supports WHYY and presents the 50th anniversary tour of legendary choreographer Twyla Tharp. Her work has spanned film, television, and the Broadway stage. Now Tharp's company will perform new works live on stage for three performances, only October 30th through November 1st at Annenberg Center Live. Tickets for Twyla Tharp, October 30th through November 1st at 215-898-3900 or annenbergcenter.org.